Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm playing an interview I did some time ago with Jimmy Clark. Jimmy is a long-time member of the Oslo Repertory Company, and currently he's appearing in the Oslo production of 12 Angry Men and doing an absolutely extraordinary performance. So I'm going to also play Sharon Leslie's review of 12 Angry Men, in which, of course, she mentions Jimmy's performance because it's absolutely standout. And I'm going to play the interview with Jimmy, in which you'll hear some of the passion, some of the drive, some of the commitment to his work that makes him able to make this astonishing performance. So now, hang on. Here come the show. Show is all about the fact that many of us learned quite early in our lives that there were parts of ourselves that were just not okay. That these parts, when we let them out, when we showed them, when we demonstrated them, were going to cause us to get criticized, teased, embarrassed, neglected, maybe even punished, maybe even seriously hurt. And so, because human children are so unbelievably flexible, we were able to suppress, to submerge these parts of our very selves. And we got so good at it that we hid these parts of ourselves so deeply inside that we actually forgot we had these abilities, skills, capacities, identities, creativities, ideas. And the problem with this is that later in life, it is very often these very things which we have submerged, hidden, that could make the difference in our living the best life that is possible for us. And so that's what I talk about in these shows. When I am not talking about that. I am playing interviews that I have done with people who make their living or their life with an art. And I do that because when you hear these people, you know that at least in the area of their work, they are exactly who they are. Unfortunately, in this culture, you can't really pursue an art with your life unless it's exactly who you are. And you can hear the commitment to being who they are in all the artists that I interview, most especially in the artist that I am, whose interview I'm playing today. And Jimmy Clark, I'm happy to say, is somewhat of an anomaly. He seems to have had a mother who didn't want to squash any of who Jimmy is, who wanted to encourage him to be who he very well is. And you can hear it in virtually every word he says. Now, this is a long interview, and Jimmy is currently appearing in the Oslo production of 12 Angry Men, an absolutely amazing production, an absolutely amazing performance. So I'm going to not talk any longer. I'm going to play Sharon Leslie's review of 12 Angry Men, and then I'm going to play Jimmy Clark's interview right on the heels of the review. So here's Sharon Leslie.
Hi. This is Sharon Leslie with a review of 12 Angry Men. Intensity reigns with this production of 12 Angry Men at the Oslo Repertory Theater. Performed without intermission, the 95 minutes rush by with riveting moments balanced with humorous interjections. Watching a well-written play beautifully acted in a well-conceived production is, let me tell you, theater gold. 12 men from various walks of life enter the jury room to render a verdict about a 16-year-old male who is accused of murdering his father. First-degree murder carries the sentence of the electric chair. This 60-year-old play, written by Reginald Rose, is perhaps best known for the movie made with Henry Fonda. By happy coincidence, the movie was broadcast on Turner Classic Movies the day after I saw the Oslo production. The script was changed here and there for the movie, and would you believe it? I prefer by far, what I saw on stage at the Oslo to the movie. What makes this production more effective is that Tony Award-winning director Frank Galati raised the emotional bar, making a judgment on the evidence and exposing where there may be reasonable doubt becomes a defining moment for the character of each man. In the movie, Henry Fonda's juror number 8 was shown to be happy when he changed each man's mind. In the Oslo production, Judd Williford's jury number 8 was intent on finding and exposing where there was reasonable doubt, and then allowed his fellow jurors to come to their own conclusions. The Oslo production reminds me of the old adage, there are no small parts, only small actors. No matter how small the part, all the Oslo actors are large. Each actor is seen 100% of the time on the stage. It's fun to look around during the performance and see each actor always in character involved in the moments. All of them create well-defined characters of differing personalities from bullies to reasonable men of varying degrees. Each have their moments of insight. Those who carry the heavier burden of the story do it with gusto. I must mention all of them. Judd Williford is marvelous as the only man to initially have reasonable doubt. James Clark is moving as the emotionally excitable bully. Excellent. Are David Bretbarth, the staid stockbroker, Doug Jones, the loud bigot, David S. Howard, the observant old man, John Sterling Arnold, the well-mannered immigrant, Don Walker, the on-task jury foreman, Danny Jones, the sports-obsessed juror number 7. Dan Dandridge, the respectful house painter. Ron Kagan, the defensive man from the slums. Adam S. Carpenter, the conscientious wimp. And Steve Garland, the flippant ad man. Director Galati keeps the characters moving and restless as they explore the, quote, facts, unquote, of the case. Costumer Mara Blumenfeld helps us know these men by how they are dressed. The set and the lighting are understated and effective. When a storm blows in, the visual and emotional difference is measurable. Bottom line, 12 Angry Men shines like a faceted diamond under good lighting. While the dark flaws of human nature lie underneath, humankind, with some well-made cuts, can be made to sparkle brilliantly.
So I'm here with Jimmy Clark. Do you prefer James?
No.
Do you prefer, you don't prefer, you don't care?
No, it's, you know, it's just, some people call me Jimmy, some call me a lot of other worse things, you know. It's,
when you introduce yourself, how do you say, what do you say?
I try not to be pretentious, so I say Jimmy Clark.
Because you think James would be?
Yeah, kind of, you know, not really, but most people make a, you know, some kind of difference between Jimmy and James, and I, you know, my biggest thing in life is not to take myself seriously or anyone else. So, you know, I have a few rules I have to live by.
At least.
Yeah.
So, okay, I'm here with Mr. Clark in the rehearsal space at the ASA.
Right.
And so I always have to explain to everybody, I do this internet radio show. Mm-hmm. And on it, one of the things I do is interview people who make their living or their life with an art. Mm-hmm. And you're smiling.
I'm always smiling.
So that's why I'm interviewing you.
Right.
And I always ask people the same question, and that is, how did it happen? How did it find you? How did it start? How did you find it?
What I do for a living?
You acting?
Yeah. It's. I'd like to, you know. Actually, the truth is, when I was a very young child.
Yeah.
And I can still remember this, being in the Bronx when I was a very young kid, and A Midsummer Night's Dream, the James Cagney one, was
on,
and I probably was maybe 5 years old, and I remember watching the movie, you know. Midsummer Night's Dream, and just going, you know what, Mom? That's the world I want to live in.
Yeah.
Because it was just such a magical place, you know, and for a kid in the Bronx, you know, something magical was, you know, that was really great. And I really forgot about that for the longest time. And then when I was in high school, I didn't do any homework in high school. But I went to a very advanced high school on Long Island. And my teacher was very smart.
I'm just curious, where did you go?
I went to Baldwin High School. At the time, it was a very, very good school system. And the teacher was very smart, because he knew I wasn't going to do homework, but he knew I liked to read. So he told me that, you know, right in the beginning, that he didn't expect me to do any homework or, you know, or write papers or anything.
My God!
He said, but if you read all the things I ask you to read, and I will ask you questions to know if you did, I'll pass you.
This is a brilliant teacher.
It was. He was fantastic. Mr. Lynch, I'll never forget him. And he gave me a lot of advanced reading stuff to read, and among them, Shakespeare. And so...
So you're reading Shakespeare in high school?
Oh, yeah. Since, you know, ninth grade. And also all sorts of things. Faulkner, and you were talking about F. Scott Fitzgerald and James Joyce, and all that kind of stuff. I mean, in high school, it was a really good advanced high school education system. Of course, there was no theater. I played football and all that kind of stuff. And so I just was exposed to great literature. And then, you know, when I graduated high school, my mother told me that I was never going to work for a living.
Your mother told you that?
Yeah, my mother. This is my high school graduating class speech. She said, you're never going to work for a living, Jim. So you have to figure out how to make a living as a bum. Because that's all you're ever really going to be.
Oh, my God.
Well, she was very smart.
You were so lucky
to be surrounded by people who could see you.
Well, I guess. I guess that's what it is, or I don't know. I just know that my mother knew me very well.
Yeah, but it wasn't pejorative. It wasn't, you're a terrible person and you're never going to, you know.
No.
It was,
no.
This is who you are. Use it.
Right.
You know?
That's exactly what it was. And so I went to college, and of course I went to University of Arizona, which, you know, you just needed, like, you know, a library card to get in at the time. Now it's much harder to get, apparently. I really don't know. But, and then I got into the drama department, and as soon as I got in to the drama department, I remember coming back to Long Island to my mother and saying, you know what, Mom, I figured it out. I know what I'm going to do. And, you know, and I told her, and she was like, yeah, that's a good idea.
Oh, it's great.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't like, you know, she was disappointed that, you know, I wasn't, because she knew I was never going to do anything.
No, she was glad you found it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And not as happy as I was. You know, and that's the truth, because I'm very selfish, and I always have been.
I'm sorry, but that does not fit with what you were saying earlier about being sensitive to how other people hear things. The introduction of your name, you know, that you use Jimmy because other people could be put off by James.
Right.
This is not selfish. I'm sorry.
Well, growing up, I was thought to be selfish because I was more consumed with what I was going to do with my life than making anybody else happy.
Yeah, you know, this is a soapbox of mine. I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
I think the word selfish is really used badly. And that it's appropriate for young people to be interested in what...
You know, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And I never took it, like my mother always told me that, and other people in my family, and, you know, that I was very self-consumed. And I was, because who else was going to take care of me?
It's age-appropriate. It's what you're supposed to do.
Exactly.
Right.
So, and I felt happy that I had figured out what I was going to do, and I always have been selfish in that way. I mean, I feel for my wife sometimes. I don't, you know, a lot of times I'm consumed by what I do, and I'm happy with that.
Yeah.
And other people, you know, sometimes other people need attention, and you're thinking about what you're worried about.
And they
have jobs, too, and just as consuming as yours is, but yet you might not think so. And so, you know, I am aware of those shortcomings, and, you know, in terms of trying to be an artist, it is very consuming, and you do have to find other things. There's no question about that.
You know, I quite often, whenever I can, I interview couples, both of whom make their life or their living with their art,
right.
And that's a particularly special kind of balancing act, but. When artists are in relationship with people who are not also artists, that's a different kind of challenge.
Yeah. Well, somebody's got to pay for this mess.
You're doing it again. You get this idea about yourself and you just keep playing it.
No. Hey, listen, I've, you know, in terms of money, I've always contributed because I always have been doing this.
Yeah, well, you're a working actor, for God's sake.
And I used to do television and stuff like that.
Okay, so take me back. So you're in college, you find your home in the drama department.
Yep.
And then what happens?
Well, you know, it wasn't easy for me because I was from, you know, New York and the Bronx, and all of a sudden here I was with kids who had been doing this their whole lives, and, you know, and they, you know, like, I'll tell you a very funny thing for me anyway. The first time I went to a drama class, I had this teacher, Dale Luciano, and it was a Friday, and he said, okay, on Monday, you all have to be prepared for a monologue, which you're going to do in front of the drama department. And everybody was like, okay, yeah. And so the class ended, and I didn't even want to say anything. I was like, what's a monologue? I have no idea what a monologue is. So I said, well, you have to go get a play. And
he told you this?
No. I asked somebody else in the class.
Oh,
I said,
kidding.
I said, yeah, because I didn't know. So I said, so they told me you got to get a speech out of a play. And you're going to say it in front of the drama department. Now, I had never done anything like this. I mean, I'd done oral interpretation where, you know, like you have a speech. And I used to get a rush on that, you know, if you could just like read a little something and, you know, bullshit your way through it or whatever. So I really didn't think about it. Okay, Friday, I was like, okay, yeah, I'm going to do this monologue. And then, of course, Sunday came around, and I was like, I still didn't have a monologue or anything like that, and I was supposed to do it in front of the drama department the next day. So I Sunday night, I was like, I got to do something. What am I going to do? So I went to the library. And I think it was like the second time I'd been to the library, so I didn't even know where to go in the library. So I started going through, and I found this play. Because I didn't know where the plays were. I'm telling you, I'm basically a retard. But I find this play called Dial M for Murder. So I start reading it, and I'm going, this is kind of cool and everything, but there's no speeches. So what am I going to do? So I said, okay, I'll play the cop, and I'll just ask questions and make believe they're answering me.
You're kidding.
No, I swear to God.
Oh, my God.
So I do this, and I look at it for about an hour, and I go, I know the questions, kind of. So finally, the next day comes, and now I'm getting a little bit nervous because I've never done anything like this. And,
right.
And I get up, and I see these kids, and I'm going, man, these kids are great.
Yeah.
They knew all the lines, just knowing the lines made them great.
It's a big deal.
And they seemed confident, and I was going, man, and all of a sudden, it was like I was coming, and I was going, man, I don't know if I should do this, and finally they called my name, and there had to be a couple hundred people there, it was a big drama department, and I get up, and I say, okay, I'm doing a detective from Dialect from her, and I start these questions, and about three lines in, I don't know the next question, I don't know what I've said, I don't know anything, right? And
right.
I'm sitting there going, okay, this isn't working out very well. So I stop and I go, I'm sorry, can I start over again?
Mm-hmm.
Brilliant, start over again. So the same exact thing happened and I stopped. And I said, well, I guess I just don't know this well enough. And somebody just went. And I swear, for the next month, I was afraid. Anybody look from the trauma department, I was hiding behind trees. I was so embarrassed. And I thought, well, gee, I can't ever do that again.
Wow. That was probably the best thing that ever happened to you.
Oh, I don't know if it was the best thing that ever happened to me.
Well, it put in perspective what you were going to have to do if you wanted this.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And, so as that progressed, the next couple of years, when it came time for the ERTA auditions, which is what they had back then, and I think they still exist, the guy who was the head of the program said he wanted me to do it, because they only did two people from each department for the ERTAs. So I went, and then, oddly enough, auditioned and was accepted here at the Oslo.
When was this?
This is 1978.
Oh, my God.
And so I went to the Oslo in 1978 to 80, and then when I graduated the Oslo, I became a member of the company. And I did this a season and a half, and also worked at Pittsburgh Public, and because somebody from Pittsburgh had seen me in a show here. And I did Biff and Death of a Salesman, and...
That's perfect casting for you.
Yeah, and some agents from New York came to see it, and one of them offered me, himself to be my agent in New York. He was a very pretty famous agent, Michael Bloom. And I said, sure. So when I went to New York, I didn't really have the hard times that a lot of young actors had. The second week I was in New York, I got a soap.
Wow.
Which
one?
Ryan's Soap. And I went from, having no money to having...
A lot of money.
A lot of money. Not a ton of money, but...
It was a lot of money.
For me, it was
a lot of money.
Right.
Oh, my God, you're back in New York. You're working at Soap.
I was 26.
Wow.
I just got out of school here and doing a little bit of regional theater. And then my life changed, from that point on. I could go out to dinner whenever I wanted to.
I know.
And I could have an apartment in Manhattan, and
right.
I could travel.
You could buy clothes if you wanted them.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. I don't really. But, my life became so much easier, and that was just a miracle. And I think, I don't know what I believe in, but I believe that I was not strong enough to make it in this business if I hadn't been lucky, because I know of so many people who have talent, who have worked their asses off and not gotten nearly as far as I did in the second week I was in New York. And I never had to look for an agent. I never, so I don't know if there's another thing, if there's something else out there, but somebody helped me, because I don't think I would have done it otherwise.
I'm good. It's interesting. I talked to Doug yesterday. We had the same conversation, and I have this conversation with most of the artists that I talk to. It's striking, the sense that this was somehow meant, that you were somehow led, that this thing was prepared, that it was something other than you?
Well, that's very interesting because, you know, like I had a really tight friend, you know, who was still a really good friend of mine. And you know, this is when I was young and I was doing soaps and television and stuff. And I said, well, you know, Billy, I believe in destiny. And he said, well, you can afford to to believe in destiny.
Yeah, because it's been good to you, right?
That's right. You know, so what is, you know, what about the other people out there? And I was like, and then, you know, then you do hit hard times. I mean, it's not always, you know.
No, but I'm talking about something else. I'm not actually talking about the success.
Right.
Although that can be a piece of it. I'm talking about the what led you to do it, made it possible for you to do it. It's what you were talking about before, that that you wouldn't have done it if these things hadn't fallen into place, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, and that's actually what I'm talking about, that sometimes there's success in that and sometimes there isn't, but it's almost as though the universe has created a place for you in this.
Well, it's interesting. I know some actors who truly love it all the time.
Yes.
They love performing. They love getting up in front of people, you know. They're just consumed by it and love it.
Right.
And that has never been the case for me. I find it much harder than a lot of people. I really don't like, you know, sometimes getting up in front of people and, you know, exposing certain things. Sometimes I don't. I mean, I have to do it because it's my job. And I can't tell you how many opening nights I went, God, I wish I could get out of this.
Well, you know, I think, forgive me, but I think you're shy.
Well, in a way.
Yeah.
I
know we have this, the Jimmy Clark persona and all that stuff, but that's not what I hear, you know?
Yeah, it's not easy for me. I really am jealous of people who'd like, it's nothing for them. It's like falling off a log. And I sit there and go, man, I wish it was that easy for me, you know? Like, I got to work my ass off.
And when you say you have to work, what do you mean? Do you mean you have to work at learning the role, or do you think, or is all the work about actually getting yourself juice to go on stage?
I think that's a lot of it, and where that comes from is just focus of like what are you trying to do as that character, you know, like.
So you get in it.
Yeah, I almost have to hypnotize myself. I mean, I've got to, like, a lot of people can like talk to a lot of people and then just go on stage.
Yeah.
I don't talk to people, man. You know, like I'm in a corner somewhere talking to myself.
Talking to yourself, talking to the character, being it.
Just
being
trying
it.
To figure out what do I want to do when I get out there. What am I trying to get from this person? What do I want, you know, and all those kind of things, and trying, really, truly trying to focus. It's so funny, because even the part, like, the husband in
Contact,
uh-huh. I would walk back and forth the hall, and just think about what I wanted to do, and I didn't have many lines, and
right.
It was funny, because one of the guards, who's right at the front there, this woman came up to me, and she said, I'm sorry, but I just have to ask you, you do this every day. What are you doing?
Oh, you're kidding.
No, and I was sitting there, and I looked at it, I was going, part of me wanted to say, I'm trying to get away from people so nobody will bother
me. Talk to me, right.
So, because they'll just see me walking down the hall talking to myself. But I said, what I really am trying to do is I'm just trying to think about what I want to do. Just what I want to do. And then trying to focus and do that. And I have to really focus to do it. It's not like I just go out and do it. You know, it's like so many times people say, oh, you know, you're just having so much fun in that show, and it's just so easy. And I sit there going, oh, man, no, it's not. It's
yeah,
not.
But you should know that that's how it looks.
Well, that's great.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
great. But for me, it's not as easy as some people. But don't get me wrong. There's a lot of actors who work, you know, have to, like, focus as much as me. But then you meet one who doesn't, and you're like, oh, God damn, how'd you do that? You know, how do you just, like... Like James Mason, I did this little thing with James Mason. He could do that. He could just like...
Really?
Yeah, he'd just go like that and go, man, that's just too cool.
Do you think that it will always be like this for you?
Yeah,
because
I've been doing it so long. I mean, you know, don't get me wrong. You know, like if I do a show long enough, I can
be it.
I can do it pretty quick, you know.
But the problem here is that you don't, really.
Well, no, but once you get into a run and you're in there long enough, you know, you can. No, that's the hardest thing about here. And I think
right.
that to me is the thing that most people don't realize, is how many shows we're doing.
Some characters come more easily than others.
Oh, absolutely.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like, Now, if I'm playing any city person, I usually play a lot of gangsters.
Right, like the guy in
Hearts. Yeah, like the guy in Hearts, or I play, really mad men and stuff like that. I really don't play a lot of really nice guys, which is fine, because the bad guys are more fun.
Yes.
But it's interesting, people have, a persona, what they think your persona is. And I really don't think about, occasionally I sit there and go, well, how does this character stand?
You mean physically?
Physically.
Yeah.
And, I'll think about differences that way, about how they walk and just what they do for a living . But I don't really think about, wow, this person is so much different than this one. I just try and... I just try and keep reading the play, because I think everything good comes out of the script if it's a good script. Mm-hmm. You can't impose your personality on a part. At least I can't. I want to give the author and the character a chance to be themselves. And so if you are true to that, I think that you will play a lot of different characters.
Ideally that is what an actor is, right?
Yeah, but there are people who play themselves. A lot of movies, through history, play a certain part and that's the only part they'll play.
Yeah.
We play
everything.
We play everything, or right. We try to.
Get everything. You are given everything to do.
Yeah, we're given chances to fail in every direction.
You are pretty self-deprecating. Did you know that?
Like I said, the biggest thing in my life is I can't take people seriously. I look around. How can you take anybody seriously? I'm a member of a country club right now, and I swear...
I'm sorry.
I know. And the only reason I'm a member is because it's like where I live, and I get to play golf. But to listen to the people, how could I take people seriously?
So what do you do with that?
So you've got to, you got to open up to people. And that's not easy for me.
No.
So I talk about acting. Yeah, it's a little bit easier for me there because it's not me.
Right.
But I'm not really a nice person. I'm not like overly nice. And I do like...
That's so funny. You are. You're incredibly nice. That's not... I think I know what you're saying, but nice is not the right word. You're not available, you're not accessible, you're not interested, I don't know.
Yes, all of those things, I'm not.
But that's got nothing to do with nice.
Oh, it doesn't?
No, I'm so sorry. No.
Oh, I said, I know I have problems. I go to that country club and I listen to people talk, I just can't believe that they're just consumed by themselves. They're so consumed with them.
Yeah. And what they have and what they did and what they're getting and where they went and all
and
that.
And how much they're giving away and this and that and how, And I sit there and just go, man, just shut up and listen to yourselves.
Right. Who cares?
Yeah, who cares?
Right, yeah.
Get in line, pal.
Yeah.
It's just hard for me to...
Yeah.
With people who have no consideration for other people, it drives me insane.
Yeah, and it's the you don't suffer fools.
I know, and I hate to say that because I'm the biggest fool I know. All I know is I root for people and I like to be nice to people. I like to respect people, but I demand the same.
Yeah. That's not bad.
I don't think it is. I think I'd be further along in life if I didn't feel that way because, it's like I've always wanted to teach, the university system. And my wife said, Jimmy, you'll never get a job. It'll never work out. It's like my mother again, right?
Yeah, right.
I said, why? She said, because you'll just tell somebody what you think,
and they'll say, thank you very much. We don't want to.
Right, and you will. You won't be involved in the politics, and you won't be able to do it. And she's probably right.
But so have you? I mean, this is so obvious, but one does not have to teach within a system in order to teach.
Well, I taught. In a professional setting in Los Angeles, mm-hmm. I was artistic director of the I had a partner on at the theater, Taylor Gilbert, and her husband is a huge producer, so we had like access to a million different things, and you know, and I taught there with professional actors,
right.
And I had great satisfaction doing that. But I've always wanted to have really. The reason I went to the Oslo in the first place was because I wanted to teach a university system, because I felt like what had happened to me at Arizona changed my life. And I felt like I could share that.
Yeah.
And I think that I can inspire young people to work a little bit harder, think a little bit more, you know, to realize if they want to be really good at this, mm-hmm. what they have to try and do. And so that was always my purpose. But it just never... I mean, I've only applied for two jobs. And I didn't get either one. One was the University of Arizona, which they didn't even... I mean, like, I have a pretty good resume just because I've been doing this for so long. They didn't even get in contact with me, which makes me think they probably already had somebody in mind. And then another school I applied to was Duke. And I knew they had a really good golf course. And I figured it was really good, you know, it would be a beautiful campus and really smart kids.
Yeah.
And so those are the only places I applied to, because I don't want to go to, like, Iowa or Nebraska.
No, God forbid.
I'm just not going.
I know.
I'm not going.
I know.
You know, you have to pay, but I think I've paid in other ways, you know. But anyway, that's what I wanted to do, but it just never worked out. But I have taught on, you know, and it's interesting, you know, everybody, it's... seems like it's competition, and art should never be competition. Art is art. Art is trying to be better at what you do. It's trying to communicate more. It's trying to tell the truth. And when competition and jealousies become involved in teaching and stuff like that, that's a big turnoff to me. So,
well, you don't fit the mold, mold.
No,
really.
I don't.
Really, right. And unfortunately, you live in a society... maybe they're all like this. I'm not sure. But you live in a society that is only really comfortable with stereotypes, with people who fit in whatever mold it is. You know that because then they can anticipate. They know what to expect from you.
Right.
That you know they're not surprised. They're not put off balance.
I got that club in my bag. You know, and it comes out.
So essentially, what your mother said was exactly right. You have to figure out a way to write your own script.
Yeah, because I'm definitely living a different life. There's no question about that.
Yeah. And again, that brings me back to the idea that I find myself so interested in, that for some people, the thing makes itself possible. Because if I'm right about you, and you don't fit the mold, you don't have the script, whatever the hell it is, you needed the world to make a space for you. It's what you said, you know, people work and work and work and work and work, and they don't get anywhere, right? Well, you didn't even know how to do that, work and work and work and work and work, but a space got made for you somehow, right?
Yeah. It's like I said, I feel so fortunate, and I think, you know, that's what I feel for most people. They don't have a calling, not that I want to call it a calling, but, you know, just for lack of a better word, they don't have, you know, when I figured out what it was, I figured it out.
That's right.
You know, so it was easy in a sense.
Yeah, you knew
I know what I want to do.
You know, the theme of my show is discovering who you really are and then trying to become it, because I think most people are not. And the reason I interview artists is because, at least in that area of their life, artists are who they are. You can't do this in this culture unless it's really who you are. And so what I think happened is you found who you were. Not what you wanted to do, but actually who you were. You were an actor.
Yeah, well, you know, it's true, because... I don't do, like I said, I don't do this because I like it.
No.
I don't do it because it's easy. I do it because it's what I do.
Yes, it's who you are.
Yeah, I mean, like, even like, you know, when I was doing plays in Los Angeles for free.
Yeah.
It wasn't like, oh, I got to go do this play. I got to be busy. It's just what I do.
I know.
It's just, you know, like I don't know what else to do.
And all of the artists say that. All of them do. And one of the reasons, again, that I interview artists for the show is because when I talk to people who have this, it's demonstrable, it's clear, it's obvious what it's like to really be yourself in any area of your life. I mean, because actors are not necessarily... See, I think you're yourself everywhere, but not everybody is. And it's my hope that people who are out there pretending to be who they're not, who haven't found it, will hear what it sounds like when you are it and know that it's possible. It's possible because I think your life is really interesting because so many people have the experience of demonstrating something about themselves and then having that squashed. Don't do that. Don't be that. What are you doing? Who do you think you are? That's not right. But from the beginning, you had the acceptance, really, from your mother that this was who you were. And then you had that incredible teacher who didn't want to lay on you, no, that's not right. You're not the stereotype. Do it differently. But wanted to let you be who you were.
Yeah.
I mean, really.
Well, I was really fortunate with teachers. You know, I had a couple of those. I had, like I said, Mr. Lynch with literature. And then when I went into theater at Arizona, this guy, Bill Prosser, was just fantastic and really changed my life more than anybody. And, of course, he died of AIDS about 15 years ago, 15 or 20 years ago, I guess now. But you have those people in your life that make a huge difference.
And if you have them.
If you have them. And I have had them.
Like I said,
that's why I wanted to get into teaching. I felt like I could do that for somebody. I could allow them to be themselves.
It's not too late.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Well, no, it's not. It's just I'm the laziest man alive. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, that's such.
Well, no, it's true. I mean, I am. I go to what's easy. You know what I mean? It's like I'm water. I'm just going where the crack is. And so, you know, right now...
Yeah, but you know what's so interesting about that is that the cracks opened up for you. You could, because they did, you know?
Yeah, I haven't... It's just hard, you know, in a way, it's just hard sometimes people really... When you are yourself...
Yes.
A lot of people can't take you seriously...
In another context.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
And that's like one of the hard things for me is a lot of people can't take me seriously because...
Because you come off in this sort of...
Yes, flipping...
Smart-ass way.
Yeah. Whatever it is. I don't know.
Yes, you do know.
Yeah. You know, so like I know it's hard, you know, like even this place, you know, I mean, like it's very hard for everybody to take me seriously here. Not on stage or anything like that, but as a human being...
Do you want to say something more about that?
No.
No, and you've been so amazingly candid. I'm what?
No, you know, well, I it's funny.
You know,
a lot of times you're blushing.
You know that.
I don't know anything.
That's not even close to true.
I do know that the less I talk, the better I do.
Ah.
Do you know what I mean?
I do.
And that's usually my policy. But since this is such a weird... you know, interview or whatever it is. You know, I know I'm not going to be reading it in the paper tomorrow.
No, you won't.
See, because that's the thing.
I will send this to you if you like, and you can decide what you don't want me to have in.
Well, no, it's pretty much, I don't think I've done any lines.
No, you haven't. It's just the opposite. Yeah. But what's so interesting about what you just said about, you know, when the less I talk, the more, the better I do, I think that has much less to do with you. I'm just going to make the same point that I'm making over and over again. Then it has to do with the culture. The culture has this idea about who we should be.
Well, it just seems like they, you know, a lot of times people want to get you.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? They just want to get you. And you could say something. I mean, like, that's what kills me about television. You know, you say one wrong thing, and that's all they dwell on. I mean, whether it's Obama, whether it's whoever it is.
When you say getcha, do you mean as in gotcha, or they want to understand you?
No. They got you.
Yeah. Right.
Listen to what they... Oh, right. You know, oh, yeah. This, and that determines who you are. Well, no, it doesn't.
No.
But people want to make it that. People want to put people
in a box.
In a box and say, this is who you are. And I'm sorry. It's much more complicated than that. That's like, you know, like when I read in the paper, oh, this person did this and therefore they're this. I don't believe that.
Yeah, but you're probably a minority of one.
Probably. And I think that's the saddest thing in the world.
I do too.
People can judge other people without even spending 5 minutes with them.
You should teach. Because this is a gift that not very many people can offer. I mean, I know you're a wonderful actor, Jimmy, and you would be a wonderful acting teacher. But this gift, the gift to encourage people to be all of themselves and not to start pruning the things that they don't think will work or that other people don't like, that's an amazing gift.
Well, I think a lot of people, you know, it's interesting because I was going to direct this thing last year, you know, late night project, and I was talking to some of the young actors, and I was like, don't make any decisions yet. You don't have to. Just keep reading it and let it come to you. Don't impose what you think it's about. Figure out what it's about.
Find it.
And then you got some place to go. And it was so hard for a couple of people, you know, that I worked with. The project didn't end up coming off. But I just felt like these people don't trust themselves.
That's right. And why should they? Because from the beginning, somebody was saying, this is who you have to be. This is what you shouldn't do. Don't do this. What are you doing? Who do you think you are?
Yeah, and I think that's an inherent problem, you know, with school and graduate programs and everything else is...
And parenting, hello.
Yeah, and everybody's saying, well, you know, you they'll criticize this, they'll criticize that, they'll criticize that, but they don't say, hey, you know what, that was really great.
No, that's right.
That was great. Think about this a little bit. That's not what I hear. I hear, oh, you know, this sucked, blah, 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 you know, and people end up beating themselves up and become defeatist instead of saying, you know, instead of giving it some encouragement and saying, listen, that was really good. Why don't you think about this? Why don't you think about that? It's mind-boggling. And, in my business, I see that with so many directors.
Really?
Especially with young actors. You can destroy a young actor, a director.
Yeah.
You know? They'll say things like, okay, this scene, I need you to cry. And they'll say this in front of the whole cast, young actor, who's, you know, he's got talent, but, you know, is on the line.
Right.
And all of a sudden they'll be like, really? And the director will say, yeah, you know, right here I want you to break down. And okay, so then you have 15 people in the rehearsal hall. Okay, let's go. And all 15 people are waiting for this person
to cry
and do all this. And I sit there and go, how stupid.
Right.
How stupid. Why don't you just go up to the person?
Right.
Why don't you just take them aside and say, hey, listen, you know what? You got to go a little deeper here, man. What's actually happening at this moment? What can you equate it to in your own life? That's how important it's got to be. It's got to be that important. Go deeper. Go deeper. And then nobody's watching. Nobody feels
right,
this
right,
pressure.
Right, right.
But I see that so often. I sit there and go, you know, like, how did you get this job?
because they knew how to look the stereotype.
Well, I think, God, I should just shut up. And that's basically all I have to say.
All right. Okay. I am very grateful for your willingness to be as open as you are. And I think you absolutely should teach. I think you should give this away. I think this is a gift that you know is not out. Most people aren't giving it, and so most people aren't getting it.
Yeah. I really, it's so unfortunate when I see, you know, people, I just feel like there is a key, and if you could just help
yes,
them
find it, and that would be who they are, then they could be who they are.
Yeah, well, you know, in all different ways.
Yes, of course, in
all
different ways. I know.
You know, not just, you know, I've seen a lot of acting students come through here, and 90%, over 90%, are never going to be a professional actor.
Right.
But I can't tell you how many of them turn into just incredible people because they have exposed themselves to other things, to thinking what other people, where other people are coming from.
Yeah.
So it isn't always, this is the way I am, and, you know, like,
God damn it.
Yeah, you know, you should, you know, like, you should get out of my
way.
Right. Well, no, maybe I shouldn't. Maybe you should ask me to get out of your way.
Right.
You know, or maybe, you know, it's just amazing to me, given just a little bit of encouragement, how far people can go. And if you can just clue into that.
Yeah. All right, so I'm boring myself by saying yet again that it would be wonderful if you could find a way to give some of this away.
Yeah, well, thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Thank you very much. This was great.
Yeah, I usually do better when I say less.
I don't think that's the truth. I think that the chances are good that other people are more comfortable with you when you say less, but I don't think it has anything to do with you being better.
Yeah. Well, I just do better. Cheers.
Bye.
And that is the outspoken, very much who he is, Jimmy Clark. And I hope that you enjoyed that interview as much as you can tell I was enjoying doing it. And as I tried to say over and over in the interview, that's an example of a person who is who he really is. And not just on stage, but in every context of his life, in this interview with me. Even though he said, I think I do better when I don't talk so much, he talked because it is who he is. And as I said in the interview, that's what this show is about trying to find the who you really are and being willing to risk it, being willing to be that person. And as Jimmy pointed out pretty much over again, it doesn't always work in the world. And that's, of course, why so many of us don't do it. But as is also clear from this interview, when you are who you really are, there will be people who want that. There will be people who can be comfortable with someone who is, this is the psychological term for it, congruent. Not pretending. Not having a mask. Not coming from their cover story. Cover story being a concept I talk a lot about in this show. The story that you created about who you are, which contains much of who you are, but not all. So, of course, we are all trained. Well, apparently we're not all trained, but most of us are trained to come from that cover story. And Jimmy was lucky enough to have a mommy who said, ooh, that's who you are. That's who you are, my son. Not don't be that, or oi, I don't want that. But that's who you are. And you're going to have to find a way to fit that who you are in the world, not to try and fit yourself to the world. So I'm really hoping that you heard this in this interview. And before I close the show, I realize that I didn't say anything about me, who I am, what I do. I talked about the show, but not myself at all. So I'm going to tell you now, in case this is the first show of mine that you've heard, that I am a psychotherapist. My practice is entirely on the telephone. My website is thelynnshow.com, thelynnshow, thelynnshow.com. Be careful not to leave the E out of Lynn, because apparently there's another The Lynn Show. If you go up on that website, you can hear the podcasts of all of my shows. You can hear this show and all the other ones. You can find out information about the book that I wrote, When You Can, You Will, Why You Can't Always Do What You Want to Do and What to Do About It. If you're interested in things like the cover story that I was talking about a minute ago, you can click on cover story. There's a way to click on that, and it'll show you all the shows where I talk about cover story and all the other concepts, most of which are actually in the book. And If you need someone to help you with computer, with electronics, with recording, with any of those kinds of things, then you want Josh Hackney, who is the guy who makes all of this possible for me, up to and including building me my very own computer, which he promises to bring any minute now, and teach me how to use. So if you've got any of those desires, needs, requirements, and I have all of them, there wouldn't be a show if not for Josh. And maybe there are things that you want to do that you require a teacher, a helper, a guide, or someone just to do it for you. And Josh is the guy. So you can get Josh at my website as well, thelinshow.com. There's an article that I wrote about telephone therapy called Psychotherapy on the Go, which if you're at all interested in, you can download. And if you've got any questions for me, you can click on Email Me and ask me any of your questions. If you live near Sarasota or planning a Florida vacation or just are interested in good theater, you should be coming down and getting a subscription to the Oslo. The plays this year are just beyond wonderful, including 12 Angry Men, which includes this amazing performance by Jimmy. So, as always, I hope that you got something you can use from this show, something that interested you or amused you or compelled you, something you didn't know or something you knew but had forgotten, because I want you to come back. So I'm hoping that it will bring you back, because I will be back next week, same time, same station, and as always, I hope you will be too.
You see, I'm getting older, my hair is turning gray. Oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring, I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. You see that I have had my shot, my time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly, well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight. No, no, we will not go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper, I'm going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang. So you won't hear me simper, I may have got